This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Kevin Plexico, Vice President of Research at Deltek. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I gotcha. Finally, I got it right there. So, Kevin, welcome back to the show, man. It's been a while.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
So let's start for the six people in the market who may not know you. Let's start with a little bit of background on who you are, what you do at Deltek, and maybe what you did at your previous employer.
Sure. So I run the research organization at Deltek, which is for the most part what people know as the GovWin product line. It's a product line that's devoted to helping companies find and grow their government contracting business by delivering market intelligence and sales solutions for business development-oriented functions in the government contracting community. So I came there about 4 years ago through the acquisition of a company called Input, and I built my career at Input, started there in the 1990s, and have been in this industry doing what I'm doing for about 20 years.
You are a number-crunching fool. And you are among probably two people that I would consider the best at this. We were talking before we started recording the show about LinkedIn a little bit, and I'd like to know how you're leveraging that, because I know you have some particular uses for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things that I use it for primarily. First, I've used it for recruiting over the years to try to find the exact right kind of talent that we need to bring into the organization. And we look for people who are rather specialized in their skills. We look for people who are cursed with a passion for government contracting and find it interesting. So that's a key. You know, you want to have people who are excited about what they do and find what they do interesting, which is rare in this space. And you need people who are analytical and understand how the government contracting market works. So we've used it very successfully for two things. One, finding people for our organization. And the other, you know, occasionally we need subject matter expertise in a certain area on a consulting basis, whether it's to fill a consulting contract that we're supporting for another company, that type of thing, where we're looking for somebody with a certain skill set and certain expertise.
So when you're cherry picking, do you use the search function and run keywords, or are you just relying on your knowledge of the market in general and trying to cherry pick maybe out of other organizations?
It's usually not about certain organizations. It's about certain backgrounds. People who maybe have capture support oriented backgrounds, proposal management backgrounds, and you can kind of look those based on those types of keyword searches to find the right people. And then you look at the organizations that you know to be reputable and kind of follow the breadcrumbs that way.
Yeah. Actually, you could use probably the advanced search and then focus on like groups or APMP members or NCMA members, that kind of thing. So
yeah, I know you're much more sophisticated in navigating that stuff than I am. I've dealt in that a little bit, but I'm certainly no expert in it.
It's as addictive as anything. So you get into the numbers on the contracts, I get into the nuances of LinkedIn. So let's talk contracts. Let's start with 2013, which was admittedly kind of a weird year.
Yeah, I think there's a couple really bizarre things that happened last year, and the main one being the sequester. And when that went into effect, we really were on a roller coaster in terms of Q4, kind of the quarterly spending. I think this industry is always used to a big Q4. We kind of plan for it, we account for it, and sales organizations ramp up for it. But
we salivate.
Yeah. And 2013 was really weird because we got off to a really strong start in Q1. You might remember this was when we had the fiscal cliff going on as well, and everybody sort of expected the fiscal cliff and the sequester to be kind of taken off the table at the same time. And Congress pulled a fast one on us, took the fiscal cliff off the table, but left the sequester on the table. And it seemed like at the end of Q1 going into Q2, agencies realized, hey, this thing's really going to happen. And we're spending at a pace that we can't support. We got to pucker up. And they slowed down award activity pretty substantially. It was actually the lowest Q2 we've had, at least the years I've been tracking it. And then, you know, agencies got the command and control of understanding what they could spend, when they could spend it, you know, that kind of thing. And the Q4 ended up being a record Q4. So we had this really big swing that we don't normally get. Though the downside is obviously with the sequester in effect, we ended up with a pretty significant drop in contract spending. That was the other, I think, key thing that we learned from that is, you know, as agencies got into the year and they started looking at where they could make cuts, they quickly realize that the salaries and the employees is really not much that they can get out there. They can do some of the furloughing, but at the end of the day, to make ends meet, they had to cut contracts. So we saw a 15% reduction in contract spending in the defense agencies, just a 2% in civilian side. But obviously, the defense side was cut more dramatically from the sequester than the civilian side.
Okay. Why was that? Why did the civilian largely escape the sequester? Because it was supposed to be across the board.
Well, the across the board cuts were, when the way the law was written, was divided into defense and non-defense. And the defense sector, for whatever reason, was facing a larger cut. They had, I think, was close to an 8% reduction in discretionary spending versus civilian agencies, which were more of a 5% cut in discretionary spending. So on the defense side, that 8% cut in discretionary spending translated into a 15% cut in contract spending and a 13% cut in IT spending. So they kind of looked at it as, we're going to protect the operations, we're going to protect the people, and we're going to make cuts where we can on the contracting side.
Okay. So we'll talk about IT spending in a minute. Were there specific areas that were impacted or escaped impact on the spending side?
So there were definitely some organizations that were not subject to the sequester, most notably being the VA. So for the most part, VA escaped in any impact from the sequester. They certainly will feel budget pressure like any other agency, but their budgets have generally been going up. We also saw organizations like the Department of Treasury and the Department of Health and Human Services fare reasonably well because they were also getting funds related to the implementation of the health care reform legislation. And so we saw pretty significant investments in HHS, particularly in CMS, as they're preparing the systems, the much-storied health information exchange that was getting built by the federal government to stand up the health care reform legislation and the health exchanges that were required in that legislation.
Okay. Do you anticipate any budgetary fallout from the fiasco that cost us Mr. Shinseki?
I think there could be some uplift opportunity. The legislation that was proposed by some of the senators, that was a bipartisan agreement that was reached, funds additional development of, I think, 26 medical facilities that would lead to construction and investments across the country where they're scattered theirs. Mm-hmm. So I think that would ultimately likely lead to additional funding for the VA, which is probably the strongest growth agency we have right now in terms of year over year.
So, yeah, I think Mr. Shinseki got an extremely raw deal. But that's just my opinion. But I'm hoping that you take away these incentive programs from the field activities and put real boundaries on them, and maybe we'll get by that with no more blood on the street.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly a big challenge. I think there's a incredible amount of demand, and the demand is going up pretty dramatically. Agencies aren't used to making big changes like that to accommodate the influx of additional people who need the veteran support that we provide. And so I think we ran into a situation where the supply outweighed the demand, and we got to do something about that.
Right. So hopefully the new facilities will do it, because the vets certainly need the and deserve the services. So let's talk a little bit about the IT spending and hardware, software, services. What's going up? What's going down?
Yeah, so the equipment and software space faced the lion's share of the reductions in the sequester year. I think that was the area where agencies said, we can get by without that PC upgrade. We can hold off on that server. We can hold off on that storage area network. You know, we can hold off on that enterprise software buy that we were thinking about. So I really saw the biggest impact being in the equipment and software space. And then professional services, it faced an 8% 6% cut versus the prior year. Communications, only 6%. I think that, you know, that kind of plays out in the fact that we have demand for communications that are more sustaining and it's operational. It's not something you can easily say, hey, we don't need the phone system tomorrow, we're going to turn it off, or we don't need to, you know, have that extra T1 line to connect us. So I think, you know, what you saw was agencies really protecting the things that allowed them to keep the operations going, and delay the things that they felt like they could get by without having.
It's kind of weird because it plays into a story that Jason Miller here at Federal News Radio did recently on the CIOs being not simply wed to the legacy systems. They just don't have the funds to go after new programs. So same.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see, you know, we're going to talk about 2014 in a minute, but I think agencies have no shortage of demand for things they want to do, and the challenge is how they get funded for them. And when budgets are getting cut, you know, a lot of things are optional. They get shoveled to the side, and you focus on the things that you really have to get done.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Kevin Plexico. You can find Kevin at deltech.com and govwin.com.
Govwin,
either one. Probably easier to find him at GovWin. You can find him on LinkedIn, and maybe he'll even connect with you. Who knows? We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Kevin Plexico of Deltech and GovWin. Again, you can find Kevin at govwin.com. Kevin, let's migrate on to 2014. We still have lingering sequester-ish issues, et cetera, so what's going on?
Well, I think we did take the sequester off the table for the most part, and agencies have predictability in their spending. I think they feel like they have predictability this year for sure because we have appropriations, and next year is looking promising. We don't seem to have the specter of a government shutdown, though we still could end up with continuing resolutions. But we're still on a spending roller coaster. Q1, you might remember back, we had the government shutdown, we had the budget debacle and debate over how we were going to go forward, and then they finally resolved that. So Q1 got off to a really slow start, unlike last year where it got off to a strong start. But Q2 is picking up really well. We've got a 48% increase in contract spending versus the first quarter. And if you compare second quarter of Q2 to second quarter of Q2 last year, we're up 58%. So we do seem to be on a pretty significant upward swing.
Now, is that across the board or is that primarily civilian?
Well, I'm looking specifically at civilian at this point because the Defense Department doesn't report as frequently or currently. But I wouldn't expect a different trend in DOD. I think they probably got off to a really slow start and are back up to where they probably were, you know, probably Q2, Q1 last year.
Okay. Let's give me some specific agencies. Again, you know, I'm assuming VA is going to be leading the pack. On the civilian side, what are the top five contenders after VA who contractors maybe should be looking a little closer at?
Yeah, I think the Commerce Department, National Weather Service, NOAA continues to get strong spending. We're already starting to see an uptick in spending in the Census Bureau related to the decennial census that's coming in the next few years. The VA, as you mentioned, has been strong. Energy Department is another one that's continued to get good funding for not only research and development related efforts, but a lot of the nuclear safety issues that are dealing with that we're facing in the country. So there's definitely some hot spots, and we've seen a really nice rebound in agencies from first quarter to second quarter and from last year, first half to this year. Almost all but three or four of them have increases versus prior year, which is, I think, a good sign of the direction we're going.
On the side, because of our little untoward activity with the Russians right now and them saying we can't get a ride up to the station after 2016. Do you anticipate any uptick in NASA spending? You know, maybe take the shuttle out of the Smithsonian and refurbish it.
Well, we're seeing their investment in that new program to replace the shuttle, and I think that will start to increase. But at the end of the day, I think in the budget environment we're in, I think to expect anything more than flat from NASA is probably optimistic.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get a ride with Virgin Air. I understand he's going out there. So, you know, Q1 got off to slow start. Where do you anticipate the spending going for the balance of 14?
Well, it seems to be trending in a strong path. We were looking at, you know, we can look at contract spending historically and get a sense for what's going on. But as you pointed out, in the defense world, you're a little bit limited in your visibility on that. But one area we can get visibility on, what I would characterize as more kind of forward-looking, is the task order award activity and the solicitation activity. So mm-hmm. we're starting to see a pretty significant improvement in the solicitation activity. And I talked to a lot of companies around this town, and you know, I would say for the first quarter and into the early part of this year, and they're all feeling like, where's the solicitation activity? We have no bids to go after, and the ones that we've submitted are sitting, you know, just hanging there on the vine waiting for some action. But in April, May, we saw really strong improvement in the task order solicitation activity, which I think is, you know, kind of a good indicator of where we're going. So mm-hmm. I would expect Q3 to be about the same as Q2, and then we'll end up with a good strong Q4, probably not record-setting like last year. Last year it was 36% of spending occurred in the Q4. I think we'll probably end up with more of the historical norm, which is about 34%.
Okay, so you're 34% spending between July and September.
Correct.
Okay, so not bad numbers, though. And that's primarily, if not exclusively, on the civilian side?
That will be in defense side as well.
Okay. All right.
They both have the pattern.
The pattern is there, which is good. What should people be? Well, let me phrase this a different way. I've been on LinkedIn for a really long time. Early on, there was a guy who, for his picture on his profile, had a picture of a boat. It was the back of a boat, and it wasn't a small boat. We're talking like 45, 50 foot here, right? Mm-hmm. The name of the boat was Task Order. So, number one, it would be a bad idea to have that picture up there now. Number two, I get calls about, you know, OS... two has just been taken off the table because of protests. A good thing in my mind, but a lot of protests going on. Are we going to see more task orders off current vehicles as a result of all this, the protest activity?
I tend to see a little bit of cyclical... A little bit of cyclical kind of spending around task orders. So what I mean by that is when we saw DHS award Eagle 2 and First Source, we saw a lot of spending shift from the GSA GWACs, GSA schedules to, and DHS in particular, obviously, to their own vehicles. And there was a movement even in the military agencies to kind of shift their spending to their own vehicles. And then we saw that reverse, and the what I would describe as the agency-specific IDIQ spending started to flatten, and the GWACs and the GSA schedules started to do really well. You might remember when Soup 4 was first awarded, it grew like gangbusters, and now it's kind of flatlined.
Right.
But we're waiting for Soup 5, and so I think there's this almost seasonality to it that's several years long, with Eagle 2 getting awarded, First Source 2, the VA now has their own contract vehicles, ITES, I think it's 3 that they're on now in the Army. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start to see the shift from the GWACs and the schedules back to the agency-specific vehicles. And they're not big swings, but it's just kind of, you know, the cyclical nature of the way things are going in terms of the task order-based vehicles. So it's hard to characterize what's going on right now. I think it depends on the agency. Every agency does it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you've been following this a long time, you've been following especially the IT spending a long time. Do you think agencies have preferred vehicles? I mean, there's always a shift away from GSA when there's a viable alternative. Is that an accurate statement?
I think so, depending on the size of the agency. What I see is the larger agencies, which tend to have more established contract shops that can manage the contracts, like the DHS contracts, like the VA's contracts. I mean, they went and hired a bunch of former Army contracting officers to set up the T4 contract.
Right.
So I think where we have agencies with critical mass, some differentiated requirements, there tends to be this trend towards them using their own vehicles. But then you look at some of the smaller agencies like Housing and Urban Development and Department of Education, Department of Justice. They don't really seem to have the same orchestrated contracting organizations, and so they tend to rely on the kind of contract vehicles that are available primarily through GSA. And that pattern, I think you can look agency by agency and see what their preferred vehicles are. Sometimes a preferred vehicle isn't one of their own, though.
Okay. Understood. Well, if it's not one of their own, we just mentioned NASA SUP. SUP 5 has been, the award has been postponed until after end of FY. So first part of the question is, was that intentional to wait till after the end of the FY, or is Joanne trying to make this as protest proof as possible? What's your take?
I don't have a line of sight on from Joanne on what she's thinking relative
Nobody
to that.
Nobody does.
I could see avoiding protest and being super careful about how you award the contract being a motivator. We tend not to have as many protests for the equipment, software-oriented contract vehicles that we get for the services vehicles. Maybe they're less arbitrary, though. I mean, I could think back to the old desktop contracts the Air Force had, and those lasted forever, right? But they tend not to be quite as
Five
controversial.
Of them, right?
Yeah, I think so. They tend not to be quite as controversial as the services-based.
Well, she's bumping up services to 10%, I think, on this version, but the services have to be tied to the equipment or software purchased.
Yeah, I mean, they're more implementation services than systems integration or software development types of services.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back with Kevin after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower because nobody else volunteered. My guest is Kevin Plexico, VP of Research for Deltek and GovWin. Again, you can find him at govwin.com. Let's wrap up quickly on 2014. How do you see this year wrapping up from both sides of the fence?
Yeah, so I think the way we're seeing contract spending go, where we ended up with appropriations, I think 2014 is going to end up being a good rebound year for 2013. Obviously, there's a lot of agencies have no shortage of demand. They have no shortage of things they need, and they really had to put some things aside last year that they couldn't afford. That I think we're going to start to see some strong adoption this year. So I think we're going to finish strong, and I think companies in general are much more optimistic about 14 and 15 than they were just a couple of years ago about what the outlook was.
Okay, so you're getting ready to do one of your prognostication events soon. So what's the outlook for 2015?
I would say better than 2014, but not as good as you'd like it to be.
Never as good as I want it to
be. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think 2015 is going to be slightly better than 2014. It's going to feel a lot like 14, probably. Mm-hmm. I don't think the worry about the government shutdown, the worry about the sequester going into effect midway through the year, some of the things that were unusual that happened in 13 and 14, I don't think are really in play in 15. We do have the elections coming up, and that's going to, I think, drive the appropriators to avoid any kind of shutdown threat. But that doesn't mean we'll end up with full year appropriations for agencies. I think it's pretty likely at this point that we're going to end up with some continuing resolutions. Congress has made some small headway in the appropriations. I think there's about a handful that the House has passed. There's only a couple that even made it past the committee on the Senate side. And, of course, they have never kind of gotten to the point where they've reconciled at this point. And what's interesting is when you look at the appropriations levels compared to what's requested, compared to what they negotiate, there's such a small difference. You kind of wonder where in the appropriations is the major disagreement. And I think at the end of the day, it's the politics that are in the appropriations that interfere with the ability to get the appropriations done versus the actual level of funding.
The only reason I was a little contentious about the CR is, there are people in the market who may have not have been born when we had a full appropriation done. So it goes back a ways.
But at least I don't think they'll carry the specter of the shutdown like they have in the past.
Right. I mean,
it's just a matter of whether they do two, three, or four of them before they kind of decide to give up and go for the whole year appropriation.
Is that because it's an election year? Nobody wants to fall out of a shutdown?
I think that nobody looks good after that, and nobody wants to hurt their record in an election season related to that.
Yeah, I mean, we get some very strange spin artists out there after and during a shutdown. So.
Right.
And again, there are no winners. So
bad flopping. Follow basketball at all.
There you go. What about the specific legislations coming down the pike? The FITARA, et cetera.
So there's some interesting legislation that could spell opportunity, could change the landscape. I mean, we talked about the VA legislation a little bit that was proposed just in the wake of the fallout from the VA issues, and that, as I mentioned, seems to be on track for setting up more funding for the VA, more hiring, also the ability to fire more easily. But at the end of the day, it's going to be from a contracting point of view, which is what I look at.
Right.
More opportunity for companies in terms of construction, in terms of IT investment and healthcare. The FITARA legislation, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform legislation, that's been beaten about. I think it's passed the House twice, hasn't gotten past the Senate yet. Has evolved, and that does have some potential significant change for the industry. I think the biggest being giving the CIO more budget authority, or in some cases, some budget authority, giving them basically full budget authority and the ability to control what investments are made. That's a pretty significant change for the industry, where in most agencies, the CIO is, for no other, not much more than a policymaker. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the big change. There's also a whole bunch of things in there that I think aren't going to do much for the industry and aren't going to lead to much change, like setting up, centers of excellence and some of the other things we've seen happen over the years that don't really mean much in terms of acquisition reform, but they seem to make the politicians feel better.
Window dressing to a large degree. So, what are the hot spots? Where should especially IT contractors, services contractors, where should these people be focusing right now?
So I think companies, many companies in this industry have found it very easy to be successful just by living off the kind of natural growth that we find in the market and the barriers to entry for new entrants in the space. And I think that's really changed. I think there's much more defined hot spots than there were before. There's some agencies that continue to grow double digit while others contract. There's some segments of the market that continue to grow double digit while others contract. And I think companies have to be a lot smarter about how they compete and how they think about their strategic direction in the business. So it's easy to say, hey, the hot spots are healthcare, everybody knows that. Big data, cloud computing, yes, these are areas that are well defined, not a surprise to anybody. I think the real challenge is how companies find their way into those spaces. Mm-hmm. Large companies can acquire their way into them. The smaller companies
and they
do. I mean, you see acquisitions of cybersecurity related businesses that are very specialized and healthcare related businesses that are very specialized, almost on a daily basis from the large firms. But the smaller firms, I think, have to be, super focused on developing talent and capabilities in the areas they want to compete and making sure they're getting on those right vehicles that we talked about earlier. I mean, some agencies, if you're not in the right vehicles, you could build the best healthcare system in the world, but if you're not in the right vehicles, you're not going to sell that product to that agency or that service to that agency. So I think there's the areas that are hot are easy to find and well known. Department side, there's VA, Treasury's been strong. There's a number of areas where we're seeing investment, and then the challenge is how do you get into those areas? And I think that's the big question companies have to ask themselves.
Okay, but we'll touch on the small business side shortly, probably after the break. But the big things here, I want to talk about something. I was at an event that Dell Tech did just a while back, and Brad Antel was one of the panelists that you had there, and I'll set it up now, and we'll talk about it after the break. He indicated that with one of the contracts they had, that his top people were literally perpetually plucked by the agency. So they were hired by the agency. But Brad had a pretty unique way of replacing. They didn't hire them to cancel the contract. They want the contract in place. But he had this churn going on. So he had in the manufacturing side, it's called just-in-time manufacturing, just-in-time delivery. Mm-hmm. He had a just-in-time replacement.
Recruiting system, yeah.
Yeah, which was pretty cool. So let's talk about that after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Again, my guest today is Kevin Plexico. Kevin is a vice president of research at Deltek/GovWin. You can find him at govwin.com, govwin.com. Doesn't get much easier than that. You can also find Kevin at LinkedIn, and we may touch on whether or not he'd connect with you. Depends on how much time we have at the end of the show. So let's do that thing that Brad was talking about at the event was pretty damn cool. I had not really seen anything like that, a just-in-time employment situation, or I hadn't really thought about it, but take it.
So I think in the services space, where your job is basically to fill spots that the government's willing to pay you for, anytime you have a spot that's empty, you're basically giving up money the government's willing to pay you to provide that person. So in that kind of environment, the recruiting organization is really a lifeblood of the organization in terms of making sure you're hitting your revenue goals and bringing in the maximum amount of money from a contract that you hold. So I
right.
think that's where we see these techniques of basically having a lineup of people that you can hire on a moment's notice being a critical success factor for companies that are really going to be successful in those types of contracts.
Okay, cool. So overall, we were talking between takes, small business goals were actually met.
Yeah, this is the first time, I think, since 2005 that the government met their overall government-wide goal of 23%. It's not by much. They met it by, I think, 0.5%, 23.5%.
Mm-hmm.
But still, was a goal. And we've seen a number of pieces of legislation and policy that have forced agencies to pay more attention to this. That could be a key factor there. But the other key thing is, with Defense Department spending going down and civilian agency spending kind of holding steady, civilian agencies tend to be the organizations that achieve the higher end of the goal, and the Defense Department kind of is on the lower side, mainly because it has a lot of aerospace defense spending that's not necessarily easy to go find a small business to build an aircraft carrier for you. So,
right.
So I think some of it is also just the dynamics of civilian agency spending going up, therefore a larger percentage of their dollars go to small business, and you get closer to the goals. The interesting thing, when we looked at the quarterly spending, which I thought was fascinating, is when you look at quarterly spending for agencies and the distribution of that for small business spending, it's like 45% of the dollars agencies spend are spent in the core Q4 for small business.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on a major roller coaster if you're a small business waiting around for the end of the year to come around for you to sell your products and services.
So there's a ton of vehicles out there for small businesses. The GSA Stars, the Alliance Small. There's a nice selection. They are highly competitive, but when you win them, there's still no guarantee.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a market where you do have to be thoughtful and position yourself for the right vehicles for the agencies you want to do business with. When we were talking about this earlier, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to sell IT services into DHS and I'm not on Eagle 2, good luck. But in other agencies, it's much easier if you just have a GSA schedule or maybe a position on one of the GWAC contracts where they're much more open to using those types of vehicles. So you have to really pay attention to what organizations you're targeting and be very thoughtful about what contract vehicles you want to be on. And then once you win, you have to be very different in your business development process than you were when you were capturing the contract. You know, a traditional RFP contract, you have months where the government's sending out draft solicitations, holding industry days, they'll have a final solicitation, Q&A. You know, there's months that you have to form teams and make bid, no bid decisions. In the world of task orders, once you win that contract, you have to be prepared to turn around a proposal for a task order you knew nothing about that came out, 5 days ago,
mm-hmm.
10 days ago.
Okay. So, and you got to be on the vehicle. You got to be able to respond quickly. You know, give me some ideas here. Give some small businesses some ideas here on what they really need to do to pursue the business and to win business.
So I mean, a couple things come to mind right off the bat. One, if you are looking for that prime position, you do need to be thoughtful about the contract vehicles you hold and very strategic about which ones you go after, because you can't afford to go after all of them.
No.
And you have to be prioritizing your bid decisions based on the ones you can win and the ones you can afford to chase. And you also have to be very thoughtful about the teams you assemble to make sure that they contribute to your position versus just being hole pluggers. If you're pursuing subcontract relationships, you know, the primes on these contracts are known, but how successful they are is a little bit harder to get. And I would say if you're pursuing a relationship with primes, you need to be thoughtful about which primes you want to work with, which ones are good at winning business on the contract as a prime, which ones are good at spending or sharing the wealth with their subcontractors. And that, you know, that's not hard to get through kind of some of the informal relationships you find. LinkedIn is probably a good source for that type of thing, as a matter of fact, where you can start to get a feel for which ones are good partners for me and making sure you're aligning to them.
Well, I have a theory that I share regularly that being a sub is being subject to spousal abuse. And it doesn't really matter who the prime is. All of them have a spousal abuse issue. Some are just more egregious than others. And there's some that are, you know, actually pretty decent. And again, you know, you can do your research in a variety of ways, but the ones that that are not pleasant to work with are relatively pretty easy to find out.
Yeah, you hear about them quickly when you're kind of out and about in industry, and I would say even within organizations, some large organizations like Lockheed, you could be partnered up with one part of the organization that's very good at working with partners and another part that's not, but they don't know each other.
Right. Well, you know, an SAIC, until the breakup, it was 19 or 20 stovepipes that did not apparently talk to one another on a regular basis.
Right, so. Right. But for most small businesses, you don't get a choice, right? I mean, you're going to have to do some subcontract work, and you just want to pick your partners carefully.
On the teaming side, have you seen an uptick in the teaming activity for small biz?
I think there's more pressure on agencies and therefore more pressure on the large primes to set aside more of their business for small businesses. So from that point of view, I see more teaming. I think in general, we were talking about the government-wide goals. I mean, they're actually doing better in almost every area. They're doing better in women-owned small business. They're doing better in the service-disabled veteran-owned small business. The only area where they continue to struggle is in the hub zone area, where I think it's because the program is just so challenging to comply with.
Well, the hub zones also change with each census.
Yep, it changes, so. And you, as I've talked to a couple owners, they say, you know, once you get it, it's actually very hard to maintain because the people that are living in that community, when they start to do well, they move out.
Move out, yeah. Yeah, well, terms of your employment are, we determine where you live. yeah, that's going to work. The other thing for the set-aside goals, we've seen an uptick in contracts that say we're now offloading this to primes. Have you seen more of that? Is that real, or is that kind of smoke and mirror at this point?
You mean where we've seen more work being shifted from full and open to small
business? No. I mean the contractors being responsible for giving more business to small business as a term of the contract.
Oh, yeah. So that was kind of what I was speaking to, is that we're seeing the thresholds raised. We want to have a goal of this much business being set aside for small business within your prime contract. And that does seem to be a trend.
Okay. Do you anticipate it staying a trend?
I think as long as there's budget pressure, there will be a pressure to make sure that small businesses aren't disproportionately impacted.
Okay.
So from that point of view, yes. But I mean, this small business issue has been around, you know,
forever.
As long as you and I have been in the industries, right? And it never seems to go away. It's always this tension of the small business contingent, you know, feeling like they should be getting more. Mm-hmm. And the primes worried that everything's going small business, and agencies, you know, at the end of the day, there's agencies, IT decision makers, and program managers who just want their programs to be successful. They don't necessarily care if it's done by a small business or a large business as long as it's successful.
Right. All right. Let's. I want to migrate back to LinkedIn to wrap this up. We were talking again between takes on what it would take to connect to Kevin Plexico. So, what your criteria are?
I tend to have criteria for Facebook that's different from LinkedIn.
Yeah.
My Facebook is more friends and restricted to friends. My LinkedIn is more professional acquaintances. And I would say generally I will accept invitations from people who are clients, who are people who I'm connected with, or connected with people that I'm connected with. people that join groups that I'm in that I, you know, start to develop a relationship with. And I tend not to take requests from people who I have no idea who they are, though I get them.
Yep.
I'm sure you do as well. And from people who I can tell are, you know, looking at it as a business opportunity to, you know, recruit my people or me or something like that.
Yeah. So recruiters, not necessarily headhunters, et cetera.
Not so much.
You had mentioned one other, and that is people who know key people in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So,
You're looking for credibility. You know, I don't want to be connected to just anyone. I want some credibility in my connections.
Final thoughts?
I think, you know, generally this is a pretty good outlook relative to what we've had the last couple of years, but certainly not as strong as it was, you know, last decade.
Right.
I think we're going to have a pretty decent 2014. 2015 won't be a lot of growth, but it'll be some growth. And I think the other thing that Brad mentioned in his remarks at our conference was that, you know, investors prefer growth, but absent growth, they want profit. And I think we're getting back to the growth trend, which is good because it means we'll be squeezing less profit out of companies than we have.
Cool. Kevin, thank you very much for coming in. It's always fun to have you here. This is not my day job. If you are having trouble with LinkedIn or you're not fully leveraging LinkedIn, keep in mind LinkedIn has become an integral part of the B2G landscape. If you're not fully leveraging LinkedIn, we need to talk. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.